Welcome to episode 9 of First Stage. That is right, Nina, 9. It's good to be back. This is Aaron here. I'm here with Caleb Davis.
What's up, Aaron?
Doing good.
Tickled to be here. No way, babe. It's nice.
And our special guest is Jake Baker. How's it going, Jake?
I'm decent.
Sweet. Well, I had to. So we turned this around in a night, so I only had like about 30 minutes to make your intro song, so don't hate me on this.
Oh, okay.
This is dangerous. Jake Baker's calling for stage. All right. This is, as you can tell, I'm not a musician, so, like, that was me trying to do the sequence to Minefields by The Prodigy, and, I was really tired, and I'm just like, well, we decided we were doing this, and I was like, I gotta have a song out there for him, and, so that's what we came up with.
It sounded like some sort of transition tune in, like, a really bad horror movie. It's like, just ominous enough that there's, I don't know, like some puppets or something that are coming to life somewhere.
It reminded me of the jingle of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, but then with like the sound of your voice, I was like, this is too sensual for Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Depends on which Mr. Rogers.
The porn parody of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
There's a porn parody?
Probably.
Oh. I mean, there's a porn parody of everything. Was it Rule 43? The porn of everything?
There can't be for Mr. Rogers. That's wrong.
I mean, Trolley's probably pretty dirty. That's all I gotta say.
Oh God! Yeah, the puppets are. Yeah.
So this week it's interesting for me. I bought a racehorse. So I'm a racehorse owner. I own 0.05% of a horse called Midnight Sweetie.
Midnight Sweetie.
So keep a lookout on the racetrack this next year, and we'll see if I make any money.
This like a impulse buy? Have you been like had your eye on Midnight Sweetie, or were you just like, I kind of feel like I want to buy go in on a horse? And
I wanted to buy a racehorse, and I didn't get the one I wanted. So this was kind of just like a knee jerk impulse. I wanted this horse called Frosted Oats.
Oh, that's cool.
And I was gonna buy 5 shares of it, which equals out to the same percentage as I got in this horse. But I guess everyone else, because like the public, it like goes into a public offering, and I was like down on the list, so everybody else wanted Frosted Oats. But I did buy a nano share of all the horses that are in the stable. So if Frosted Oats does do well, I'll make like $1 or something.
Nice. There you go.
What made you want to buy a racehorse?
I grew up at the racetrack. I've been betting on horses like my whole life. So then when I could see that there was a minority ownership available, I was like, well, we'll just try this out. We'll throw it. It was like $200. So, I mean, like, I've wasted $200 on worse things. But now I can say I own a racehorse. And
nice.
should be fun. Should be interesting.
You might make your investment back in 20 years.
Yeah. Maybe.
Well, you get a big one.
Yeah. I mean, like the horse that was a part of this that I guess that made it popular was the horse that won the Kentucky Derby last year. Mm-hmm. And so I did the math, and if you did the share or whatever that I got, your $150 would turn into like I think $3,000.
Wow.
The
horse, shit, yeah.
The horse made like $6 million in prizes. So.
Damn. Okay.
Fuck yeah.
Never mind.
So. So if I can get half back, I feel like I'm doing good. So
nice.
But so this is First Stage, and we talk about like starting out, and I thought that this was my first podcast ever, but it's not. I realized that I did a podcast a while ago, and it's just out there in the ethos, and it's like basically me, almost in like a would be like a therapy session. So I thought that this would be a fun like new segment of. We're going to call it Vintage Durbin.
Okay.
And I'm going to take, I took a choice minute from this, the first episode. I think I've got 10 of these. So for the next 10 episodes, we'll have a choice minute of Vintage Durbin. So let's go ahead and listen to this.
All right.
Dealing with life, but in a comical, fun way. Like I said, I am trying to be a stand-up comedian. And it's really funny because we had a new room we worked tonight. It was a hookah lounge. And I did it. I didn't have what I think was a good set. Like, I knew, like, for me, the ebb and flow of sets is, like, if I've come off a good one, I'm almost guaranteed to have a shitty one. If I came off two good ones, I'm going to definitely have a shitty one later. And it's been that mindset of me, like, going out there and trying to do it basically will fuck up the things. When I don't give a shit, that's when those sets come out really well. And, like, it makes sense, you know? Like, you go out and you do your thing, and because you don't care, it rolls off the tongue and it kills or does something better, you know. Like when I get in my head too much, it never works. It just never works. But I think that's probably a statement on life. If I get in my head too much, it never works. Yet I'm always in my head, and that's why I feel like I'm not like a normal person. I feel like there are times in life that I think that people would really enjoy just being ignorant.
So there we go.
Nice. That's good advice.
Yeah, yeah. So I forgot I did this. I was like driving. I want to say that was like on an iPhone 4. And I want to do a podcast. I'm listening to a podcast. And I'm just like, we'll just do these where I'm driving to somewhere. So they're all like 10 minutes long. And like some of them are really deep. And I'm like, well, we don't want that really out there. But, you know, there's nothing I can do. It's out there. But I'm not going to draw people towards it. But we'll do a minute of that each time. I think it'll be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that you had a lot of truth in there. I mean,
yeah.
Regardless if like, you're like keeping track in your head, like, oh, I bombed this time, I'm gonna do better next time. Like, you're probably not. Like you said, like, I don't know. I think it's a combination of preparation and like kind of psyching yourself out. That can definitely happen.
I would only not care, like, have that those great sets of when I like, didn't care if I prepared before. Like,
yeah.
If I read all of my jokes again and again and again and had it so memorized where I could have like four drinks and still do it perfectly. But right. if I just kind of read it twice and this kind of showed up and I was like, all right, I didn't read it, so I gotta get every word correct because I messed up. And then I would always bomb. Like every time I bombed, it was because I didn't prepare before.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, I get that, at least that sentiment of sometimes you get on a roll and then you're just like, and then it's like you get on a roll like leading up to a big show, and then you just eat shit at the big show. You're like, I already ran out of all. I'm out of my good shit.
I hit every.
It's good weird. Mic, and then yeah.
Showcase comes along and you just eat it because it's right. Like you like used up all your mana or whatever for the week. So
right. I guess I try not to just pay attention to it. I mean, yeah, I'll come off and be like, that was bad or whatever. But I'll just try to. I don't know. I try to flush them pretty quick afterwards, but. Yeah, I can see that just being kind of a hindrance, just getting in your own way, mm-hmm. just not getting out there and just cutting loose and being like, well, crap, I need to make sure and do this right. And then you just come off rigid and people are like, yeah, well, that's kind of weird.
I remember one time where it's back in October, I just saw the movie Joker, and I had this huge like rant about my feelings about the Joker movie. And I wrote it all down, and then I went up on stage on a Tuesday at Cafe J, and I only read it a couple times. I was like, I have to get every word right. And I bombed so bad, I just ended the set like 3 minutes early. And then I go up, I went up to Aaron, and I was like, tomorrow I'm gonna kill tomorrow. And he's just like, all right, whatever. and then I threw away the paper because I was like, I have an emotion about this. I don't need, like, it's kind of a contradiction what I just said, or it's like, I know exactly what I feel. So I'm just the next night, I'm just gonna go up and say how I feel. And that was the best set I've ever had, period.
Nice.
So that was nice. You weren't there for that. I remember you were sad. You told me that you were sad that you didn't come about something. You had some issue. I don't know, something was going on. And he said it was the best I'd ever had. So contradiction to my first statement.
Oh, yeah. Well, you always have like you always hear those. Like, anytime you miss a show or miss a mic, somebody's going to go off and you're like, someone's going to be like, dude, you should have. And then you're like, oh, fuck, I should have been there. Should have made plans to get there. But
yeah, it's got that FOMO out there. It's coming strong.
Yep.
But you're still kind of recently, you've been doing stand-up for what, a little over a year, year and a half? What?
It would have been a year in May. So it's technically almost 2 years now. But COVID, so it doesn't really count. So yeah, a year and a half, I would say,
yeah,
of actually doing it.
Yeah. And so on this, we like to celebrate like the start. And I had you send me a video that has one of your early sets. Can you remember like where this is at and like what and when was this in your time of doing stand up? Like, how have you done open mics before? Is this the first one?
I did one in March 14th in New York City. And it went okay. Like, people didn't laugh, but they kind of like went. And I was like, "Oh, okay, I can do it. I'm a comedian now."
You know, starting in New York City is pretty huge. So,
well, it was an open mic at 4 o'clock, and apparently you have to pay to do open mics. And I was like, I didn't know that, and the guy just didn't make me pay. But anyways, but the first actual set, that's the one I sent you, was my first actual set.
Okay.
And May 28th, and do you want me to talk about it after you play it or before?
Just set it up exactly. Well, first, what got you to do the one in New York that started the process?
Because I always wanted to do it, because like I was obsessed with Tom Segura, and he's what made me kind of like fall in love with doing stand up. And then I watched Mike Birbiglia, and I was like, okay, I think I want to do this. And then I was in New York City, we were just visiting. And I was like, where else? Like, this is the perfect place. Just try it out. It's New York City. And then when I came to Lubbock, I kept trying to find a place to go. But there was a place y'all used to do it, like on like a part of those party clubs downtown. But
wow, Backstage probably.
Yeah, Backstage. Yeah. And they told me it closed. So I thought, oh, I guess there's no more stand-up in Lubbock. And then I researched back May 27th, I looked up again. I was like, you know, I actually want to go. Let's just see if there is anything. And I went on Google, and I was like, oh, there's stuff at Lantern Tavern, so I'll just go there. And I wrote some jokes, and they're horrific jokes. They're not even actual jokes. Like, it's embarrassing when I rewatch it. Like, I watched it after I sent it to you, and I'm like, I'm ashamed of myself. That's terrible.
That's what we want.
Yeah, though.
That's the theme of this. It's just like shame, and but like, I mean, it's all based on you've improved since then. So like,
I hope I have.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and get started. This is the Lantern Tavern. This is in May of 2019. Is that right?
Yes.
Awesome.
All right. Here we go. Sorry, I played the intro again. I got three things here to click, and I clicked the wrong
thing. I was like, I don't remember that.
All right, here we go.
Anyone here play video games? Nobody's video games? Well, I've been playing this game called God of War since May 20th of 2018 till today. And that's the reason why I didn't write any material tonight for this entire week, because I've just been playing God of War. And I thought if I just sat alone in here that I could think of some material by the time it was my spot. But I kept getting weirded out by myself, because I came to a bar and just sat alone all creepy. So I don't know if you were here, but I kept changing spots. And I kept, that was like my first spot, but I felt kind of like serial killer-ish. So I moved over there, but I felt like I got stood up on a date. So I moved back over there, and I was like, you know what? That guy feels like a loser, so I'll just stay right there.
Chateau.
Can you find the hole, or do you want me to do that for you?
God.
Men.
I never took sex ed, so that's what Christian education gets you. Anyone watch the series finale of Game of Thrones? I was so disappointed by that show. I always compare, like, the first four seasons is like a really ugly girl that has a lot of content and character, and the last two seasons like a really, really pretty slut but has like nothing on the inside. That's just what I think of it. And the sad part about the series finale is that the porn parody had a better ending than the actual show. Really? I didn't watch the porn parody for the sex. It was purely for the story. Really, if you watch the porn parody, it's called Game of Bones. And, yeah. And they have this thing called The Wall. Like, yeah, that's in the Game of Thrones. But in porn period, the wall is made of jizz. I don't know where I'm going with this, but that's a wall made of jizz. Just imagine the logistics. Like, I mean, they're there alone because they got punished, so they have to go to the wall. So that's all they're doing. Jon Snow just like, he's doing that. Oh, but man, that show disappointed me. Like, I think as soon as there stopped being like rape scenes in the main show, that's when it all went downhill. Like, that was the biggest part of Game of Thrones, is like, that was all the rape scenes. And that's what people ask me, like, I haven't watched Game of Thrones. So like, what's it like? It's like, well, are you uncomfortable with watching rape? I was like, of course anyone's uncomfortable with watching rape. I'm like, well, maybe Game of Thrones isn't for you. Like, you know? I really got a piece, so I'm gonna cut it short.
All right. It's funny how I didn't listen to that and then also brought up porn parody of another thing before we even like got into it.
It was in his eyes. He was penetrating your mind with his eyes.
No, but like you got a couple of crowd, like there's obviously something physical that happened that you can't see on the audio that had like everybody going nuts.
Yeah, that made the set go good. And then the jokes aren't that good, but like because of that moment with Selena, it actually made the set better. So it gave me that false confidence of being like, I'm a hilarious person.
Yeah, I killed.
And then the second set, I totally bombed to the point where I was like, oh, this is what silence is. Like the entire crowd, even in the audio tape of my second set, you can actually hear someone scratch their head.
Oh, shit.
Like I saw him do it, and I remembered it when I heard it like a week ago. I was like, oh, yeah, that's that guy who was scratching his head looking at me.
It's like you can hear boredom in the set. It's insane.
Yeah, do you remember what happened? Like, did like something happen with the mic? What happened? Why did Selena go?
Oh, the cord came out.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
That was happening quite a bit.
Yeah, the cord came out.
We had like
a
shitty mic and a bad cord, and it was like, mm-hmm. So yeah. It was kind of our fault.
We're sorry we set you up to fail there, Jake.
People like it keeps falling out, and it's like, hey, well, it doesn't fall out.
You made me have a good set.
I was gonna say it's a built-in gag. You know,
yeah, that's
it's
right.
Just like, it's just like you didn't. The guys didn't laugh because it wasn't plugged in, but I had a great punchline. Like, I have to say though, watching you for over like this year or 2 years, when people do not take the joke the way you expect them to, you are way more funny because you get like mad and you're like, that's not where you're supposed to laugh, man. What the hell? You stop what you're doing to let them know that they got to take that joke differently.
Like, yeah, I would be like, y'all don't get it. This is funny. Like in my head, I would play like, why aren't they laughing at this joke? This is hilarious. And then I would rewatch the tape and be like, oh, that wasn't funny at all. I'm on their side now. That was that happened a lot. Less than I thought it happened last year. So I thought like, oh, I'm so terrible at this. I should just like stop doing it. And I watched it. I was like, oh, I actually did better. I did more times I did good than bad. So I was like, oh, I'll keep going with this. That was a,
yeah, and we would be doing it tonight if we weren't in a crisis situation, because Wednesday night's our normal gig at the Lantern Tab.
Yeah, we would be there.
Yeah, and I told them we'll be back. We'll be back just, you know, when it's not, like, insanely crazy out there. And, like, trivia went down, too, so it's not like we were independently. It's just, like, I think the Entertainment Collective, you know, decided to hold off until, you know, they're not like refrigerated trucks in town, like taking dead people. So,
yeah, no doubt. It's a bummer because it's like there's a whole lot of shit right now, especially with the election, that I know a lot of comedians probably have that would be pretty funny to hear and get some takes on it. But it's like that's the shit that you got, like, you know. I don't know. Like for me, like I haven't even attempted any of it. It's just like too absurd. Mm-hmm. But you know that would be like, it's like that's how the mics go. Like after an election or after anything, jokes get refined and refined and refined and refined. And it's like somebody's got the best take. Some comedian's got the best take, and they'll hit that for a couple weeks. And you're like, that's pretty fucking funny.
Yeah.
So it's not, I don't know, that's something that I'm missing, at least right now, where it's just like, what would have been the best, most like, I guess it's like, my joke on this is better than yours, so you know, they just stopped telling it, so there's just like a whole lot of content that's just getting missed. Because I feel like beforehand it was like, let's go hear everyone's COVID jokes on whatever's going on. But now something, you know, it's a once in every 4 years election, you know, big deal. So it was, I'm missing that part of it just to have that outlet to do it. But anyway, yeah, you know.
That's my favorite part is like, I love throwaway jokes, disposable jokes, stuff that you would do on a monologue or something. You're just like, this is only funny tonight and maybe funny tomorrow. Then it's done, you know?
Right. Yeah.
It's like in the moment kind of stuff. But I mean, like, judging from that, Jake, like you, like, I mean, you've come a long way from that, but you've kept the, I don't know, the essence or like the way you approach things and stuff. You like you'll see people that'll come out and like do it and then they'll change completely. Like Chris Rodriguez was on here and he like did it with an accent the first like couple times. He's just like, hey, how's everybody doing today?
Yeah, you know? It's like he was, it was like he was like, yeah, it was like he was masking his nervousness with like a accent, or at least that's what he told us. But I believe that, but it's like you just kind of like, I don't know, it's like Jake's just like a, it's like he goes out there and he just starts talking about shit, and it's almost like he has this look that he's not really, oh shit, did I really get into this? And oh my bad, like the way it looks is like you stumble into punchlines, but you've written it that way. Yeah. So it's always like, people are always like, whoa, what the fuck? This kind of innocent looking white guy is talking about this shit. And like, people, I've just always noticed that it's like a nice, like, you're just like, oh, and then you're like, oh, fuck. And you're just like, yeah. I don't know. It's like you kind of just stumble into some stuff, but I know you wrote it that way. Mm-hmm. So it's like, kind of goes with your kind of innocent look as like a young fella that's just like, yeah, I'm just trying to figure this out.
People have come up to me and some like the local comedians, I'm like, how did you do that? Like, that's such a great improv. I'm like, none of that was improv.
Yeah.
I wrote every word of that. And like, but how? Like, someone made a comeback, someone talked to you in your crowd. I was like, I preemptively wrote lines to say at people. Like, if people interrupt my set, I wrote out jokes to yell at them about.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's some stuff that I don't know if I do it intentionally or not, but it's like, there's only a few things based on jokes that people are going to say if you're like kind of have a,
yeah, sometimes you're almost, sometimes it's almost a red herring for like the audience. You're like, I'm throwing this out there so you say something so I can respond the way, because I've got this great thing in my back pocket that I want to throw at you.
Right. Yep. I noticed in your set that you brought up, and it's funny because like exactly what you were thinking about, like the self-consciousness of like where you were sitting at the bar is 100% true. Like for years, me and Durbin would, or any of us, whatever, but me and Durbin particularly, we'd sit around and be like, yeah, you see that disaster of a swipe right date going on over there, or this poor sap over here. He looks like he's just done with a breakup. So it's kind of funny that you were like, moving chairs around, because it was like definitely something like in that bar that happens. I don't know if you knew that or if that was just like a feeling that you had, but
I think that's like, the very few moments I've ever actually done an improvised joke, because that's like how I felt during like before the set. I was like, felt weird in all these spots, and then I just like, oh hey, that kind of sounds funny, and just went with it.
It went
better than I thought it was gonna go. Yeah, I'll say that.
To paint a picture of this bar, this is a college town, so it's far enough away from the college, and it's not like too like there's a side of town that's really kind of uppity and like we're all like people. It's not there, and so it's this perfect like in the middle thing. So we always make these jokes that it's the perfect, the unassuming Tinder date. It's like meet me here, you know. It's like it's not too fancy. It's not too, they can make you a fancy drink. You can like do stuff, and then there's like casual entertainment. Sometimes there's a comedy show that you didn't know that people were going to talk about your date on stage, but it does happen every once in a while. But
Yep. That's exactly what LT is like, right in a nutshell. It's like, it's the perfect, like, if anybody wanted to have an affair in Lubbock, they're having it there. Or, like, if it's just a Tinder date, or just, like, you know, very unassuming of, like, what actually is going in there. It's like, oh, hey, there's a bar here. This is kind of in between my house and this restaurant we just stayed at. Let's go check it out. And
I've never brought a Tinder date there, but I've had the feeling of, like, this feels like a good place to bring a Tinder date.
Yeah. I mean, only like me and Caleb will probably, you know, make fun of you later. because I mean, like, I would say, I guess I'm a regular just because, you know, like, I've won the fantasy football trophy there, you know.
It's oh,
like
you're I've been, definitely a regular.
Like, I've spent a little time there. And, and yeah, it's always funny because, like, you could always tell the people, like the waitresses and, like, the bartenders, they would, like, make sure to not bring, like, a date there until they were, like, really into the relationship. It's like, hey, I'm ready for these guys because they're all going to come after you. So.
Yeah, it's, yep, it's like instant busting balls over there. But, yeah, that was an interesting, I don't know. I think you did pretty well, at least for your first time. You didn't seem super nervous on the audio. It just seemed like you just came up and you're like, all right, this is what I have and I'm done.
Because y'all know this, like, I was never actually, I'm never nervous while I'm doing it. It's always right before I'm doing it. Y'all know this, I would vomit.
Yeah.
You were Any Given Sunday on that, like, that you would vomit before your every set.
Yeah, every set.
So like, all right, just so y'all know, like, for me, like, before my set, it's like I either have to take a shit or I have to pee. Like, mine's that's my body, me being nervous. It's like, depending on what I like, and I'd even wait to take a shit like at the last second at my house before I came, and then I'd still have to take a dump. It's just like my body,
your asshole knows when you're going.
Yeah, it's just like you know what's going on, and so there'd be times where it's like there's one bathroom in there, and I walk in and I hear Baker throwing up, and it's like, son of a bitch.
There's only one pregame ritual in this bathroom at once, you know.
I was like, well, let's hope he's first and not second. Yep,
he's gonna be throwing up some more after I finish what I'm doing.
Yeah, no doubt. But yeah, that kind of always blew my mind that you just kept repeatedly signing up for it, because you'd be sitting there and like there'd even be times you'd be there and you'd have a full plate of food, and he hadn't touched it yet, and he's like, "No, I'm gonna eat it after my set," and where I was just like so puzzled. I was like, why? Like, that's
there was like a hamburger, cheeseburger, like that like was probably out there for 20 or 30 minutes that you didn't touch until
you
after
just
your set.
Stare at it and you're like, well, I throw up before my sets, and I was like, oh
yeah.
And you wanted to get the order in before like the bar closed, so it was like, or the grill closed, or the whatever, the kitchen closed, so it was like you had to order it preemptively. And then I don't know, it was just always like kind of a fun thing to see Jake there, like, and you like know that he's getting close, and you look over at him, and then he gets
it's
up.
Like,
just
the time, yeah.
Broop, there he goes.
Yeah, everybody's got these weird routines and patterns and stuff. Like, it's just like, I'm just like, nope, they gotta get up, they gotta walk outside for a minute, and then they come back in, and then they do it. But
it got to the point to where I just wouldn't eat all day. I would wait until after my set, and then when I got home, I would just gorge on food.
So you were that nervous about just like the whole day, like, would it just wreck your whole day with nerves that you were going up later?
I would be physically ill all day.
Damn. Like,
and then I was...
This is a guy serious about comedy, people.
Yeah. I would show up, and then as soon as I walked into the building, it would all... And then I'd do my set, and then I would get like this crack feeling, if I did good. And I would feel amazing, and then I would just go home or go to McDonald's or something and just gorge on food.
Yeah.
And then go to bed.
Cycle, like, since I know we've done a lot of mics, you know, since the COVID thing, but like, do you still throw up before your sets or
no? I stopped doing it in September 12th of last year, on my birthday of last year. I remember like that day I'd stopped feeling ill, and then I ate all throughout the day, and then I ate before my set, and nothing happened. I was like, this is weird, and I did my set. It was great, and I was like, oh, I think I'm over it. Over this pre-ritual, and then until COVID, I never threw up again before a set. Yeah, it was just that very beginner stage of nervousness before a set that I would vomit.
I don't remember. Did you come out to the two mics we did before? Yeah, you did, I think. Yeah, you were out there.
The ones that we just recently did, the two in between
the COVID things.
The ones recently?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was up those, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, okay. We were so busy sanitizing microphones and stuff, I couldn't remember whoever was. We were just trying to make it a clean show to not contribute to the problem and stuff. So it was like, because I just remember how upset you were the next week and you showed up. And because people don't know, Jake doesn't have any social media. So
yeah, he's like off the grid.
He did not know that there was no show. And I've never seen you so angry. You're like, no, I'm out of here. Like, I just gotta. Like,
you and the bartender, like, you want to hang out? I was like, no, I'm going home.
You're like, I can't do my jokes. I'm out of here.
Like, I was mad because I got all these. Wrote them again and again and again and again, and I had all these new jokes I wanted to do, and then I was so excited. That was like the new feeling after I stopped vomiting. I would get excited throughout the day to go do it. Like I would have a happy feeling, and then that day I was so happy. I was like, I got these jokes. I'm so excited about them. And then I walk in, like, there's no show. I was just like, God. I was like, damn it.
Yeah, I was so mad about it too. Like I was, the next one would have been the Groove Show. You know, like for me, it's like you got to get into it. And I was like, I wasn't thinking in the comedy brain, and it took two shows. And I'm like, all right, now I'm just thinking about jokes all the time. I'm ready to just go up there and crush it. And then we like set records and and like got rolled back by the state. And I'm like, oh man, I don't want to be that guy killing a bunch of people because you know we got to tell jokes. So
right, yeah, I know I missed one of the weeks because I was going through COVID, so it was like, I don't know. It's weird. I've got like four or five jokes that I was like definitely wanting that are just like in the can, and I don't know if we'll ever bust them open because I'm sure I'll go back.
Yeah, I've had
3 or 4 months from now and be like, fuck those jokes. These aren't any good.
I've had one in my back pocket that I'm just waiting to do out of town, like away from no one, and just to see if it works. And like I'm like, well, if we ever travel again, if anything happens, I mean, we're not even allowed to go to New Mexico right now, apparently, you know. Well,
right,
the governor
you
says.
Can't go, I'm doing quotation marks, you can't go to New Mexico unless you quarantine for like 20 fucking days or some shit.
My friends would go to the casinos in New Mexico and sleep in their cars. Because if you got a hotel, you had to stay there for like 2 weeks.
Apparently,
like in quotations, you had to stay for 2 weeks. So they would just sleep in their
hotels.
Cars.
Loving that. It's like, yeah, we'll book you for 2 weeks. Yeah, we need people here. So,
yeah.
But
what a terrible thing to have to do. It's like we just wanted to go to Hobbs for the casino, and apparently, as soon as we checked in, like that would be such like a New Mexican thing to do. To be like, no, y'all are good for the night. Be like, oh, by the way, you're stuck here for 2 weeks.
Yeah, we made you keep that credit card up front because we're charging it for 2 more weeks. So enjoy it. I have stayed at that hotel at the Hobbs Casino before. It's actually really nice. Like, they give me a free one, then I realize I don't gamble at the casino. I just bet on horses. And so there's like, well, this guy, we're not making money with this guy. So they took that away after that first time, but really nice hotel. It was nice to stay the weekend.
You got it once though.
Yeah. I'm still ahead on the hotel casino game. But like, this is the portion of the thing where we just want people to know a little bit more about you. So we're going to ask you just some random questions.
Okay.
Let's start with some wish fulfillment. So you get offered an opening spot. Who do you want to open for? Is it Tom Segura or is it someone else?
If any professional comedian offered me a spot, I could pick any.
Yeah, any. Like
who would I prefer?
Who's the one who's just like, all right, I want to go out there and rock and roll.
I know the one I want, but I don't think he would want me because I don't know if I fit his style. Like everyone wants to be like Dave Chappelle.
Yeah, I don't want Dave Chappelle because I feel like I would not be good enough.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think I'm nowhere near good enough, and I don't think I fit his style of comedy. So, for what I think I am, what style of comedy I think I do, I think I would fit more with, like a John Mulaney or like a Birbiglia.
I could see you opening for Birbiglia. Yeah. I can't even say his name.
The guy
who's great in Billions, you know? Like,
Birbiglia.
That's like the comic place, that show Billions. It's got Dan Soder and Mike Birbiglia has a good like little arc in there too. Mm-hmm. It's a show for comedians apparently. But like I'm same with you on that. Like I feel like Dave Chappelle would be like a band opening for Metallica or something. Mm-hmm, yeah. They're just gonna we don't want to see you. We're here for Dave, you know.
Boo! The fuck out of here!
Like Dave Chappelle,
finish faster.
Dave Chappelle's so famous, he might have Metallica open for him. Yeah, that's how big Dave Chappelle is.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, they're probably playing at his Yellow Springs stage probably.
His cornfield, yeah.
Aaron, who would yours be?
I have to go with Bill Burr. I gotta go. Yeah. I feel like I'm not as angry as him, but like I have those kind of like like his jokes and stuff, like where he's talking about is like, why does Michelle Obama have to write a book or whatever? So it's like, I have feelings like that. I'm just like, it's true. You really didn't do anything. No, I'm just going to get a bunch of hate mail for that. Right. Hey, I was a precinct delegate for Obama, people. Don't get mad at me.
There you go. Redemption. And now we're just even. That doesn't skew us in any other good way.
What about you,
Caleb? I don't know. I haven't really put a whole lot of thought. I would just love to open for... I mean, I would fucking do any comedian in a big city knowing that it's sold out. I would fucking roll that. I don't give a shit who it is. I don't even care if, like, it's... The only way I wouldn't do it is if it was a clean set. If it was, like, you know...
Well, yeah, that was the one offer we've gotten during this time, is to do a clean show. And I think... Right. And, like, I mean, there are a few guys that were like, yeah, let's do it. I'll do it. And I'm like, I don't want it. Sounds like a corporate gig.
Well, yeah, I was like... The guy messaged me. So, yeah, we got a message on through Facebook. Or I got one about doing some Christmas comedy show for his office. And so I was like asking all the pertinent, like, how many people, what are you paying? Mm-hmm. And at the very end, it was like, what kind of comedy do you like? Like, what's like, if you could rate it, like, are you, you know, general G, you know, G, PG, PG-13, rated R.
I'm like an R sometimes.
And so he was like, we'd like PG to PG-13. I was like, I'm not your guy, but I will find... I have some guys that do that. And he was like, well, we've heard... He's like, well, we heard that you were really funny, is what they said. And I was like, you don't want me doing it. It's like, it ain't going to happen. And so anyway, that's always kind of fun to like try to negotiate and get kind of...
Yeah, it's like out. We're at the time of Christmas parties, and there's like, oh, it'd be fun to have a comedian at Christmas party. And it's like, well, what kind of comedian? I mean, like, right. Most Christmas parties are like, there's work nothing, Christmas parties. Yeah. And then, like, at my office, I wouldn't tell any of the jokes, like, I tell on stage at all. I'm like, I try not to be funny at all in the office. Like,
right. That's a good move.
Yeah, it's like, I'm like, you come out after hours and see, and it's just like, that's fine. I'm like, I'm a straight-laced person in the office, so.
I don't talk about PG topics, but I am clean, so I think maybe.
You would have been fine. You would have been fine. We just kind of started with Steven, and then we went down from there. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, Feldman's usually the go-to clean guy.
Mm-hmm. Which is funny because he shows up and they're like, is this guy going to give me like hepatitis B? What the fuck's going on with this?
Did I see him doing graffiti out on some building?
Dude, yeah. Okay, so like people just like talking up that you can do jokes has been like the worst ever in this last weekend. I was in Austin for one of my, one of my youngest brother's wedding. He got married.
I saw those pictures. You looked like Macho Man Randy Savage.
I did. It was very grandiose. It was huge. And so, like, the full thing's out. It's like, oh, well, you're a comedian. And I'm like, not, like, in real... Like, I do stand-up, but that's not my job. Mm-hmm. Like, I do other shit. So it's just, like, everybody that I did any sort of talk before or met was just, like, dance, monkey, dance. Yeah. Or, like... Well, I'm having a hard time following because there's a comedian next. So like the whole time I made it to a point that I was not going funny the whole weekend, and I didn't. And it was like I had a couple of barbs just at my brother because I was the best man in the wedding.
I was gonna say, if you hold it for the toast, you're like, I'm about to kill you guys on the toast.
But I didn't. I didn't even do it then. I just went sentimental, and it was just like, this isn't about me. This is about my brother. So y'all just. If y'all want to come bullshit with me as I'm chugging, as I'm like negotiating like tequila from the back bar so I don't have to go through you putting an ice cube in it so I can just start taking shots of it, then you can come see me do that bullshit. But I'm not dance monkeying dance for Uncle Ted because he heard that I'm a comedian. He's like, pretty funny guy. It's like, no.
It's like the worst question. It's like, oh, you do comedy. Like, I would think we have relatives in, and it's just like, oh, you do comedy and stuff. It's like, tell me a joke. It's just like, I'm not like Fatty Arbuckle or something. I don't know. Like, it's like, oh, and a guy came in from Detroit, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, that's just not how comedy's done anymore. Yeah. There are one off jokey guys, and they're really good at writing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't write that way, so.
I get turned off from girls when they ask me that question. Like, I'll go out with a girl, and they're like, oh, you do comedy? Tell me a joke. I'm just like, all right, the date's already over.
So like you're a young single guy, like uh-huh. You're single right now, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to get you in trouble or anything. Have you had girls that you're on dates with come to your show, and are they like
the? Oh, I won't let them. No.
Oh yeah, that's no smart move. I think
I don't want pity, laughter at all. I want my friends come. I want anyone that I know in my personal life come to shows. Like I remember.
Yeah, I don't want my family members there.
I remember one show, a whole sorority came. I think you're both there. A whole sorority came all to support this one guy.
Oh yeah.
You remember that? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
Was it at Art Bar?
No, it was at a tavern. And he came up and he was just like,
yeah, it was like, you know, it's one-timer guys that, like, come up and, like, at a table of 20 people or whatever. And they're like, woohoo, here comes Rusty or whatever.
Yeah. You know, like, and I remember what he said. Like
Travis.
I remember what he said almost verbatim. He was like, we went and partied. And then we went over there to the roof and partied. And then this guy came up to me and he was trying to flirt me. He was like, you gay, bro? And then he was like, nah, man. And that's kind of what he said verbatim.
You describe every time that happens.
Oh, yeah, the whole crowd was like that.
Funniest shit.
But when he got to mid point in a set to the end of the set, not even his friends were laughing or clapping anymore. It was just his girlfriend going, that's funny.
It's one of those things where 5 minutes becomes an hour. It's just like it's like you got that like I think there's not a lot of mercy with your friends or anyone else. It's just like you get like a minute, and like if you're not really coming with fire after that, it just starts to wane and go away and stuff.
That's almost what I said when I went, because I went right after him, and what I said, I go, y'all aren't his real friends.
So you're just tearing off band-aids immediately. Y'all don't fucking even like this
guy. To let you know, we're never going to see you again here.
Yeah. And then the rest of the set, I didn't do my jokes. I just talked about how terrible orange people are, because they're all sorority girls. They're all orange. And they were all like, meh, meh, meh. And then all the guys, all the boyfriends were all like, yeah, like, dude kind of suck. They wouldn't like laugh, but they would nod.
And then she hits him and he's like, ah. It's like, sorry, babe.
Yeah.
This does kind of suck.
So like, I remember like a week or two before that, I was like, maybe I should invite like a girl that I'm seeing to come. And then that happened, and I was like, oh, never, no. I don't think I'll even like a long term girlfriend come. Like, no, I don't need.
Yeah, because it'll be one of those things where like you've been together for a long time, and then she's like, it's just like I don't find you. Like, there's a whole Seinfeld episode on it. It's just like I don't care for that kind of humor.
Yeah.
It's just like what?
That's kind of my move. It's like if they come once, like I'm gonna make sure and do something that's way out of the box that I know they fucking are gonna hate, so they won't come again.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, they'll know that, like, whenever I tell folks, like, look, like, I'm pretty vulgar comedian, so if that's what you're, like, expecting, great, but if not, don't, like, it come at your own peril if that's what you really want to do, but you might change your opinion of me if you go, and I don't really want that, and I don't really care, but if you're there, I'm not going to filter anything because you're there. So just letting you know that that's not a thing that I do. And so it happens. And then you're like, so I have herpes. And then your stepmom stands up and walks out of the door. And you're like, I fucking told you.
Friends of my mother would be like, can I come to your show? I'm like, I can't stop you. I'm not going to say anything terrible, but the other comedians might say something terrible. I'm like, oh, I'm okay with that. But I'm like, I know there's topics you're very sensitive about. And they will talk about them. And like, what do you mean? I'm like, you know the topics that I mean.
Yeah.
Do not come. And they haven't come, so.
I think I remember a show where I think your preacher was there at the comedy show.
My college minister came in. He's actually a really cool guy. He would stay, like, he came like 4 times in a row, and he would stay up until the fifth comedian, and I would always sign up for the sixth. And then he would get through every time. It would always be JJ Howell that he would just be like, all right, I gotta go.
JJ Howell walks the preacher. I mean, I think he'd be proud of that.
Well, it's also not because like of the actual material itself, but he goes to bed at like 9 o'clock. So anytime he would come, it's like really pushing it for him.
Oh, yeah, struggling.
Yeah, so.
And even if he's remotely tired and starts hearing JJ, he's like, that's his name.
People taking too many shots. All right, I'm out of here.
Yeah, it's time for bed. Yeah.
Caleb,
is it? It's my question.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that was a long. That was a long segment for.
Well, I mean, like, first question. Well, I technically answered asked two questions, and then yeah. Like, I was in the flow, like, okay. You know, after two shows pre-COVID, post-COVID.
Right on. Yeah, I guess
you all the questions you want. So.
Yeah. So, there was like and I kind of had to step in slightly just because I could see how like mad you were getting. You were like. Mm-hmm. You'd like deemed a nickname that you like no one they started calling you the Prodigy.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to ask you, like, I know that sucks, and it's like and I definitely had to like step in and be like, yo, like,
calm it down.
Fucking
yeah.
Like this shit, like, quit being a dick because he's like,
like, you the know, muscle hamster.
Yeah, or like, you know, like the he's new blood here, and he's actually doing pretty good.
Yeah, we didn't want to scare you off when you keep coming.
But
back.
Like, did you feel like, okay, so like in our scene, did like I feel like everything was like going really nice, mm-hmm. and like an open at that point in time, and then some people just kind of started picking on you really for no reason.
I didn't see them pick on me. Like, I didn't feel that. It was. Only, I remember a quote from Seinfeld where Tom Papa said that he's the funniest comedian ever right before Seinfeld came up. That was his introduction.
Yeah.
And after it, like, he did his set and he got off the stage and goes, never do that again.
Right.
And it was only because it puts an expectation of me. And so the crowd's like, oh, he's a prodigy. Oh, he must be hilarious. And I'm still really new. So it's like, I most likely am not going to be hilarious. So then if they hear me and they're like, oh, he wasn't what I expected, they don't think. Always say your expectations low.
Sure.
And saying someone's a prodigy, it's like,
yeah,
like, this guy's a Michael Jordan of comedy.
Yeah.
And it's just like, well, I have to be Michael Jordan for this set for them to enjoy what I'm doing. And that maybe they do would enjoy it either way, but that's my mentality, is that you've set an expectation I can't reach.
Yeah.
And they weren't bullying me. I didn't see it as that.
Right.
But it was just like, hey, I'm...
Well, I just saw it, and I knew that it was like, look, like, this has got to stop, because it's just... It's really just... It's
one of those things that the
comics just torpedo. Will... It's torpedoing your set, and you don't even have a chance to work even whatever you wanted to say.
Yeah.
Who gives a shit? It's an open mic, like... Yeah. To introduce somebody as the prodigy or whatever,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
obviously, yeah, like you said, their expectations are sky high, and that was just.
Bunch of guys that feed on that, like, awkwardness, and it's just like, oh, you're making me feel awkward. I'm definitely going to keep doing it, you know, that kind of thing. So
I don't know. It's kind of I would say that I dealt with something very similar to that, mm-hmm. in the sense that, and it was like a very nice thing that people were saying, but it was like, mm-hmm. this kind of fucking sucks, like. Right before my set, they started calling me, like, the godfather of Lubbock comedy or something.
Oh, yeah.
And
I thought you were going to say Big Montana.
Oh, no. I don't give a fuck about Big Montana. I'm just... Fuck you guys. Don't call me Big Montana before my goddamn set.
I only did that once.
Yeah, you only did it once. But those guys still call me Big Montana every once in a while. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, all right, fine. I guess I'm Big Montana. Give me all the cheese and all the beef you have. But, yeah, that... It would just... I agree with you in that sense that it would just kind of... You just kind of go in knowing that I have zero room for error, or even if I'm coming out to work something, somebody out there is going to be like, this fucking guy was the godfather of comedy? Like, fuck, he sucks. And you're like, yeah, well, I guess I do.
Yeah, there was even a discussion online about, like, well, Caleb's the godfather of comedy. I think JJ was like, I'm the king of comedy. And I'm like, I've always just said I'm the viceroy of comedy.
Would do that, it's like you see a movie trailer, like, this is the greatest movie of all time.
Right.
And that's the trailer. And now they're like, and people cross their arms like, oh, is it now? And then they're like, oh, that movie was just okay.
There's nowhere to go from the greatest.
There's nowhere to go, yeah. So it's just like, I don't want them to think I'm... great. I want them to think, oh, this is just a comedian. Let's see how this goes. That's the level of expectation I want, is just, let's just see how this goes.
I know.
So did you find yourself in like boxed in a little bit where you were like, I've got to write real, like, even better material because people are doing this to me?
Yeah, I would do that.
Yeah, that sucks.
Because in general, I'll just write all the time. But when he started doing that, I'm like, well, I want to do good, so I have to do better. Because I know they're probably going to do that, so I have to write better jokes. So in a sense, it kind of helped me.
Yeah.
Write better jokes, but it also...
But it also, it, I mean, shit, you don't know until you get on an open mic and rip something if you can change it or update it. You may have had some material.
You don't
want to
start behind because they sent out this, kind of false narrative or, like, you know, or just too much expectations or whatever.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You may have had some material that you never ran because you're like, I don't know if that's good enough or not. Mm-hmm. You never really got a chance to do it. I don't know.
That kind of make me start, like, I would see a joke, I'm like, that's not ready. I'll just throw it out, basically.
Right.
And I'll go back later. It's like, oh, that's actually okay. I should have tried that. And then basically just that, like, I just wouldn't try some of the jokes that I thought needed work. I would only try the jokes where I had it, where I knew I had it.
Yeah.
So now I have a pile of, like, 100 jokes I've never done from, like, the last year because I had the expectation of, oh, I have to exceed. Even though these people in this bar don't care at all, they don't actually care, but I care because I'm actually serious about making this my career, and so I have to surpass a self expectation of me now.
Sure.
So that's kind of like, I guess that's my mentality on that.
That's a good place to be, especially now, because since we can't do it, you know, it's just like, it's like you got to find a way to keep writing, keep doing things when you don't have the audience. Because I mean, we've all like looked at the Zoom shows and stuff, and I'm like, it's not the same. It's like you need that kind of feedback of like just a live audience.
I remember when Selena first texted me about that, like, you know, first started doing that, and I was like, no, I'm good.
Yeah. No. I think it's kind of is what it is. It's the best that we can offer, and it's just
not ideal, but at least at least it'll get you to get some content out of your own head.
Sure, so,
like,
I think that's really the only. Yeah, I guess that's the only.
You know, take like 20 of those 100 jokes and just, you know, throw them out there.
Well, that first set I did when y'all first came back, or I guess temporarily came back, I like had 6 jokes and they all worked, and I'm like, I just took it out of my like haven't done folder. I'm like, all right. Only 100 more to go before this folder's empty.
Yeah, like I was at this show and there was really windy and like all your papers blew away. Was that set up?
No.
because it was hilarious. Because like even when things go awry, like just your demeanor on it, you're like, well, that wasn't supposed to. Like it was just the way you the way you handled it. It felt like it was just like, I'm like, this is Jake Baker just killing it. Like,
see, the words that I said was pre-prepared. Like, I was going to say, I didn't know that. I never thought that wind was going to be a variable in stand-up. And then as I said that, my papers were blowing away in the wind. I didn't set that up, obviously. I just brought those papers up because I thought, like, what if I forget my jokes? I haven't done this since March.
And it was outside because we were trying to be safe. Right. So, and we wanted space and, like, you know, keep the virus at
so
bay.
That perfectly timed up with a line I did pre-prepare, and then that happened, and I was like, same thing, people were like, that was such a great improv. I'm like, that wasn't improv, the papers, that was just life. Like, they just blew away.
God helped me out with this joke.
I am a prodigy.
I made the papers move. Oh man, like I always like to do just dumb like joke or dumb joke. Well, I do dumb jokes, but I like dumb questions. So tomorrow you're going to lunch. Where are you going to lunch? Like, what's an average like I'm going out to eat lunch place for Jake Baker?
I'm an extremely picky human being when it comes to food. Like, people will like they're like, oh, let's go to Chicken Express. I'm like, no, I don't want to go to Chicken Express. Like, oh, let's go to Burger King. Like, I don't want to go to Burger King. And I did this list 20 options to the point where people won't ask me what I want to eat. They'll just take me. So
But it's just you. And like,
if it's just it's me
you
alone,
and you're outside the house and you have to go somewhere that's an establishment that serves food.
I'm an Asian food person. Like, that's like my main diet. Like, my mom literally buys a bag of sushi rice and a rice cooker, and that's like what she would just feed us on. So I primarily eat Asian food. So it's like Payway or Thai Pepper or Bangkok. So just any of like Asian places. So
I like that. Yeah, I like that.
If it's like quick lunch, like the closest thing to me is Payway. So probably like Payway.
Oh yeah. I got nothing against Payway. Like, I love Asian food too. Like, it's just like, I have like a different, like, I get a specific dish at a different, like Bangkok would be Pad Thai. Mm-hmm. Chew Chai would be Khao Soi. Thai Kitchen would be Penang Curry. I don't know. Like, I just feel like one place does something that I really like really well, and then I get that.
You know the bowls they have at Bangkok where you get those little chips?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
for they always push those chips on you. Like, you sure you don't want you like on when you're like there to go? Yeah. And they're like, you should take some chips to go. You know? Like,
and see, they would say that. And so I thought the bowl was for me to take home.
You took the little wooden bowl thing home?
I took like 30 of them.
So you go to Jake Baker's house. He's going to serve you in the Bangkok bowl.
You see, my senior year, I went to lunch there. And this girl from also I went to school with was like, Jake, why are you taking that to your car? I'm like, it's to go. She's like, no, it's not. I'm like,
you're the bowl bandit.
So I skipped the rest of school. I went home. I got all these bowls and gave it to him. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. I thought these was like to go. And this is like an Asian lady. She didn't speak English. She was just like, blah, 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 blah. She kept waving her head. And then she just walked away.
She's like, we just bought more. That's what it said. We just bought so many fucking more.
She's probably like, I fired Fred for this.
Yeah. Right.
I thought he was stealing our bowls.
That's good.
Well, you got anything else for Jake Baker?
Yeah. Let's see here. I see that you're wearing a Bronco. He's wearing a Broncos little
beanie.
Beanie, that's the word.
Yeah, you can see it on Instagram when we kick this thing out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So are you like a diehard Bronco fan, or are you just like, hey, I like the Broncos because of like other shit? Or
No, I'm pretty diehard Broncos fan. Yeah. It all started with the man upstairs, Tim Tebow, and then it just grew from there.
So you were like, Tim Tebow made you a Broncos fan?
Yeah.
You were kneeling on the sideline.
It started as like the other option you said was kind of casual. I was like, I kind of like the Broncos. Like, I like the way that their colors and their team looks.
Yeah.
And then Tim Tebow, because he was like every young like Christian guy was like Tim Tebow was like their role model.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, Tim Tebow all the way, and now he's a Broncos. And I was like, oh, well, now Peyton Manning. You can't not be a fan of Peyton Manning. And I just stuck with it.
Yeah, and you got a Super Bowl with Peyton Manning.
And a Super Bowl Peyton Manning, yeah.
That one.
And I was like, ah, screw Tim Tebow. Who needs him when he left?
I didn't think about that. Tim Tebow was like the poster like football guy for Christianity, pretty much.
Was.
Like,
yeah, he was like, I'm taking a knee. And then now we're like,
now you shouldn't take a knee.
What are you doing?
Hold on. Now knee's bad. You know, it's just like, is that for Jesus or is that because you hate the American flag?
Is this for Jesus or Black Lives? What's going on here?
I remember when he left the Broncos. A couple years later, he went for the Jets.
Yeah,
and within one day, they sold $5 million in apparel.
Yeah.
That's how much people love him, is that they'll support whatever team he's on. His
minor league baseball jerseys went like crazy.
Yeah. So the Mets were like, we got to pay for Bobby Bonilla somehow.
Yeah. We got that contract that's never going to end.
Yeah, when he left, I was just like, I think I'll stick with Peyton. I like the Broncos. I'm not going with the Jets.
So you're still a Broncos fan.
I'm still a Broncos fan. I love the Broncos.
Which, who's their quarterback now?
Drew Locke.
Okay.
Loch Ness monster.
He kind of sucks.
They're having a tough year.
I just think ever since Peyton Manning, they've had Super Bowl hangover, and then they've just been timid. Like every time I watch an offense, I'm like, oh boy, are they going to throw an interception? Like every time I watch them, I never think they're going to go down the field. I always expect them to get whooped.
They should be a great home team because they're playing in the like worst conditions for like, because it's still outside and it's like a mile high stadium. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so like you figure all those guys are like hopping and weaving and stuff. You should be able to win every game.
They've had a top five defense every year since like 2013. They've been in the top five defenses every year.
But it's just
the offense.
No quarterback.
The offense, the Super Bowl year, was slightly above average, like slightly.
Yeah.
And then every year the offense has gotten worse and worse, and the defense has only maintained or slightly gotten worse.
Yeah.
So they haven't been able to pick up the slack from the offense. So that's why they haven't gotten the playoffs, like ever since.
I had a time in my life. There's like 6 years I was like a diehard Bronco fan. Mm-hmm. And then my family pretty much was just like, you're a Cowboys fan.
You better bathe in Troy Aikman.
But it was all because of the salute, the Mile High salute with, Terrell Davis and Elway and McCaffrey, that was some pretty cool shit. Right. Shannon Sharp, that's an offense. Yeah, that was a problem. Yeah. So anytime they have a good offense, they're a problem.
They're like the best every time they have a good offense.
It's like, we've got a decent offensive line. We're going to give the best running back in the NFL 35 carries. Have fun. We'll see you in the fourth quarter.
When Peyton Manning was there, they were the top one or two offense every year.
Yeah.
They should be a team that's always making up on the second half. Just because the other team's winded or whatever, you know.
You should stick them in a really low circulation area, like their opponents, like,
their hotel room, stuff. Like, sucks oxygen away.
It's
like,
funny, since Super Bowl 50, every season since then, they've had almost 40 games where they've lost in the fourth quarter by 2 points.
Damn.
Like, they would always just miss it.
Yeah,
every game they would just miss it, unless they're facing like the Chiefs or something, they would get destroyed. But every other game, 2 points. Every game they would lose by 2 points.
Isn't that like Atlanta this year or something? Like they're always losing in the last like possession or
just
whatever.
Blowing it.
Well, the thing is, they would score a ton of points and then lose the lead. The Broncos would get destroyed in the first half and slightly get in the third, and then dominate the fourth quarter, but still lose the game. Like, damn. I saw that time and time again to where I was like my faith was being challenged to be a Broncos fan in the past 2 years, but I'm sticking with it.
They still use Tebow on the Jumbotron?
They used him. I went to a Bronco game the year after the Super Bowl, and they had him on the Jumbotron.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, they had him.
Yeah.
We still use Crabtree, so it's fair. And Mahomes.
Mahomes. Well, I mean, Mahomes is going to be on the Jumbotron forever.
Yeah, like, forever.
Guys, it's third down. Fucking let's kill him. Let's go.
Oh, man, I would love for Texas Tech football to be good again.
Like, we're terrible.
Ever since Cliff. It'll never happen again for a while.
Ever since Leach.
Cliff could make great offenses. So even though they would lose, it was like still exciting to watch.
Yeah. But it's the Leach deal.
Yeah.
Leach started it.
So. We had Leach. We had a program that was going to be sustainable, and then we just freaking torpedoed it. It was bad.
Yeah. And now we had to bring in that senator from Alabama elect.
That son of a bitch.
That mother.
I saw that. I'm like, do they know he sucks at football?
Oh, yeah. What did he? What was one of his first quotes? It was like,
"You know,
you got the
three
branches of government. Yeah. You got the executive, the Senate, and the House."
Yeah,
they're going, "Oh, this is our senator. That's fantastic." I'm like, "What a jolly fella!"
Yeah,
like he won in Alabama. I'm like, y'all should like view a football record as his political record. Like he sucked at college football. Like he should have lost that election. I don't know why they voted for him.
Yeah, he's white. And it's Alabama.
Yeah, and he was good at Auburn. So, like, he won the War Eagle for him. But,
yep.
All right, well, I think we're at, like, we're over an hour, so that's pretty good. We always close this out with the vinyl pick. And you chose the Steve Martin album, which we had talked about this before. Was it Ralph Records? And there was a great wealth of comedy albums. I can't remember. I might have gotten that from there, but you took the Steve Martin album, which you said you have. Why'd you pick that one? And let's go from there.
Because the other ones didn't look that interesting to me.
Yeah, that means I got to get more vinyl for these picks because I think JJ was just like, I don't know any of these. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm a weird guy.
I can add to your collection, but it's a bunch of old bullshit that I have from my dad's stuff. Shit.
Yeah, I'll raid a little bit of my parents too and have some more of that stuff, get some grassroots in there.
Because I come from a roller skating rink family, so I have like thousands of vinyls.
Oh, sweet.
So I'm just like, I don't know about these. Yeah. I was like, this one's
really it's good. Solid.
So like y'all
it's
owned a roller skating rink?
We sold it last year in October.
Which one?
Adventures next to the range.
Oh, yeah,
that was ours. My grandfather Kevin still owns his skate ranch.
So can you just tear
up? I used
up,
to go to
like,
skate ranch all the time.
The side by side original. You can go backwards. You can do whatever you need on them, like some badass stops and stuff.
I can do anything.
Wow.
I used to do figure skating for a little bit. I could do anything.
That's crazy. Like,
I stopped doing figure skating because I only did it because.
The uniforms.
No, girls, not uniforms.
Oh, yeah.
And then there were no girls. They just assumed I was gay. And so I was like, oh, I'm quitting.
That's a problem with figure skating.
I quit pretty quickly.
I'm a male figure skater. Like, they're like, oh, I guess I can't go out then. It's like, shit.
Wait, what do you mean?
Why did all you guys ruin it? I can't think of the last, like, non-male figure skater.
Right? See, I didn't want that, like, traveling with me as, like, my reputation.
The guy from The Cutting Edge, that's the one. That's what I can think of. Toe pick. All right. But it's a great album, Steve Martin. Mm-hmm. Like, it's got King Tut on it. It's the only comedy album I have. Tut. But Steve Martin, man, like, it's a crazy, like, that's a guy who just, like, was at the top of his game and just quit doing stand-up. He's like, I'm over it.
He was also just kind of like, I'm dated. He like, I remember in an interview, he was like, I think my comedy wasn't going to live on to the 80s, 90s, so on. So I'm just going to retire. He was like, this is 70s comedy. I'm done.
Yeah.
So that was interesting.
Well, it's interesting with him because, like, I'm like, I like what he's doing with the banjo stuff and everything. Mm-hmm. But, like, I'm not, like, yearning for him to come up back and do stand-up, but I am yearning for Eddie Murphy to come back and do stand-up. Like,
yeah.
I
yeah.
want to see Eddie Murphy come back.
He actually did a special, like, a couple years ago with... I forget his
is that Martin Short or something.
Martin, yeah, they did Martin Short.
And him, guess did, I missed that.
They did, a they did it, special,
and they
yeah.
basically just bust each other's balls the whole time. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's pretty funny, but not like okay. So like, I understand what you're saying with Eddie Murphy because it's like if Eddie Murphy comes back and does comedy, he's about to fucking tear comedy a new asshole oh, to yeah. shit out of.
Yeah.
And I feel like Steve Martin would be like tuning his banjo and yeah, yeah. be like. I think we're okay. Like, we love you, Steve, but we've probably been there, done that.
Eddie Murphy said he was going to come back, and he goes, I was about to do it. I was going to go do it that Tuesday, and then, that Wednesday, and then COVID happened, and then he's like, I guess I'll never know when I can do it.
Yeah.
So I was sad.
Good thing on the horizon is we're going to have a Coming to America too. So that's in production, true. And I'm cool with that. So
Me too.
Well, Jake, you've been an excellent guest. Is there anything you want to ask us or anything? I know you don't have social media, so there's nothing to plug, I guess. But Jake Baker will be at the next show that we do as soon as the COVID pandemic is over with.
Yeah,
so.
If you want to text him, his number is... I'm not going to give his number.
I was about to be like, my address is 5. No. What? I don't have anything to plug. I've been told to get a social media, like professionally get one. But I don't know how to do that.
I think we could show you like for this podcast we just like I just decided to just do an Instagram because I'm like, you know, it's like a Facebook, a Twitter. I'm just like photos, like, you know who's on the show. Yeah. It's pretty simple. Mm-hmm. And I think Instagram's the way to go, just because if you don't want to like write stuff out, you just take a picture,
right?
Yeah,
simple. Like, I'm here tonight picture. Yeah. You know,
simple enough. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, you've been an excellent guest. Well, this is you. First Stage episode 9. And we will get back to you people pretty soon. So catch you later.
Bye.